Good morning, Ithaca, Watkins Glen. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Anna McCown. Good morning, Anna. It's good to have you here.
Hey, Eric. Thanks for having me.
So Anna, the way we start the show is with the big question. You know, who are you? What do we need to know? Kind of, how would you like to frame your life, or just to give little edges of descriptions to get us started?
Sure. Yeah, I can start with a couple adjectives. I'm a pretty sensitive being. I'm creative. And to throw some nouns out there, I was formerly a Southern Baptist, hardcore, from Alabama. Now I live up here in Ithaca. I've always been queer. I just didn't recognize it until I was about 22 years old. And that's a good place to start, I think.
Okay. So you brought some music with you, too. And it pays homage, I think, to the many dimensions of your life. So the first one is, how do you pronounce the performer's name? Sufjan Stevens, come thou fount of every blessing. And do you want to say anything before we play it, or say something after?
Sure, yeah. So this song sort of encompasses much of my childhood and some of my early adulthood. I had never listened to secular music until I was into my late teens. This is my favorite hymn that we used to sing growing up. And it's by an artist who I fell in love with in college, who's actually a secular artist, but he released a Christmas album that had some of my favorite Christmas hymns and carols on it. So this is sort of this is both my Christian life and also what came after that in college encompassed in one song.
Sure.
To wander, Lord, I
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Anna McCown. So Anna, what experience or experiences have been major in defining your life?
I think my spiritual path has been the major defining thread of my life. Every time I think I'm making a decision out of rationality, I come to find out later that actually there was other stuff going on in my heart that went into that decision that I maybe wasn't even aware of in mm-hmm. my mind yet mm-hmm. at that time.
Mm-hmm. So you're discovering that there are things that you are not conscious of that they're still abiding by.
Yeah, it feels like my personality is like an iceberg. My rationality is what's at the surface, and I can see it, and I feel like I'm functioning using that most mm-hmm. of the time, when really everything that's beneath the surface, that's in my subconscious or in my heart, that usually weighs more heavily in most of my actions and decisions.
So what have you had to do to accommodate that observation? What have you had to change how you approach yourself as you've become aware? And maybe when did you first become aware of that?
I think I've been aware since I was young, 12 years old, around that time, and I recognized I needed to take time to myself in order to get in touch with the things that were deeper than my brain, and I usually did that through creative acts. I've been playing guitar since I was 13, being outside, going for walks, that sort of thing, just mm-hmm. taking time to sort of slough off the layers that the world puts onto us, and just sit with myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, what I'm trying to ask here is your spirituality as the underside of the ice, or the bottom side of the iceberg, but you're also talking about a lot of singing and playing and doing things that are physical, walking. How does that all come together for you? And how did your early Christian experience, did that connect to that for you, or was it, where did you start, and how and why have you moved?
That's a great question. I think when I was doing those things, I knew it felt good to do those things, to play music and to go for walks and sit with myself, but I didn't understand then that it had to do with my body and being in my body. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now I feel like I understand that I experience the world as an embodied being. My spirit is firmly in this physical existence. I don't see a separation between my spirit and my body, even though the tradition of my upbringing does believe that there is a separation, and that, you know, when we die, the idea is our spirits transcend and mm-hmm. our bodies remain.
And that's the formal speculation, but if they're really strict about it, that's still speculation.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So much is speculation when it comes to death, and when it comes to the many things that define our perspective on the world. I just happened to grow up in a tradition that was pretty convinced that they had everything right.
Right, and there's some, and what? Why was it important to be convinced?
I think on the surface the answer is for community, so you can be more fully bonded with your sisters and brothers in common belief. But even as I say that, I feel like that's not enough. That's not enough for me. That doesn't describe why people were doing this. Community certainly was a benefit that I had from growing up in church, and mm-hmm, that I mm-hmm. see my family still appreciating and having, but I feel like you can have that without being convinced. Maybe the convincing has to do with fear.
Yeah, and maybe the opposite. I mean, being convinced actually keeps you from having to deal with so much that's under the surface. Mm. I mean, it's like what I was hearing was in a certain sense, you value that rationalized approach, but there's so much beneath the surface that's also present that needs attention in your own life. And I'm wondering if that kind of is maybe how the tradition is functioning.
I think so. It's difficult to face the idea that what you have been convinced of might not be accurate or wholly the truth.
Right.
And if you do sit long enough with yourself, you do start to dig into those things that appear as contradictions on the surface that it's just easier to dismiss if you want to stay a part of your community.
Right, without conflict.
Right, without conflict.
Yeah, and that's where, in some sense, the community may appear stronger than it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because when conflict does arise, it's very hard to process if everybody has been convinced.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you, what has your spiritual path been, since this is the defining thread? Where did you start? How have you moved your...
I think I began... Well, it's helpful to say, I think, that I took my faith very seriously from a young age, seemingly more serious than my peers, which is something about myself that I still don't quite understand, but I took it all to heart. I took it very seriously, and I also embraced questions that I had about contradictions that were coming up for mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. I wasn't afraid of them. I felt like my faith would be stronger if I leaned into those, and so I did internally. And the times I did ask for guidance or help from mentors with those contradictions, I was usually given answers that they had resigned themselves to so they could remain convinced, rather than occasionally I was given the advice that I should continue to lean into the questions mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and that my gut sense that my faith would become stronger was right. But most of the time I was given answers. And I think it was probably around the age of 19 that I began to really question whether or not what I had been believing my entire life was true or not. And I decided I wanted to study anthropology in school because I just wanted to find out how, I guess, the myriad ways that humans have existed for hundreds of thousands of years on this planet. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of information about that out there, and I'd been given this one way, and I wanted to hear other ways, so I took this adventure in school that led me abroad on a research trip to a tiny island in Fiji, where we lived and worked with indigenous people there for 2 months, 2 summers in a row. And I almost drowned when I was swimming in the ocean there. I'm a person who has a lot of experience swimming in the ocean, and my dad is very much from the sea, and he taught mm-hmm. me a lot about it. And it was really his knowledge that he had passed on to me that got me out of trouble. I was with a few other women, and we had been swimming along the reef outside of the village, and the current was pushing us back to shore, so we swam about a mile away from the village in order to get away from this current and get closer to the reef. But we approached this place where the reef breaks, and there's a trench, the second deepest trench in the Pacific Ocean, with a current that goes all the way to Tonga. One of my comrades got swept out beyond the reef, and me and another were standing, huddling on this piece of coral while the tide was rising, trying to decide what to do. And a Bible verse flashed through my head at that time: I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And then a silence, and then, no, nothing's going to get us out of this situation except the knowledge that I have being applied. And so I saw some waves breaking not too far from us across the current, and me and my comrade decided to swim towards them because we knew that there would be something shallow there if the waves were breaking. And we knew the current would try and pull us out, so we swam perpendicular to it, and we reached them. We got to shore. We found some help. They rescued our friend who had gone outside the reef. There was jokes of marriage promises between the woman that was rescued and her rescuer. The Fijians, too, thought the whole thing was funny. You know, they can read the ocean so well. When they found out we were in trouble, they didn't rush to help us because these are things that would never happen to them because they can read everything in the
right.
sea.
But
the important part of this story is there was a moment when I let go completely of believing that there was a personified deity that could somehow help me.
Right. Yeah, supernaturally intervene in your
exactly.
situation.
And this was, until this point, I felt like I was seeking a personal relationship with this deity. And
right.
I think in that moment I realized that it's the relationship that I'm seeking is connection to all beings and all things, not one personified deity.
Right. It's also a relationship with yourself.
Mm.
You know, and in a certain sense, when you said that story, what I heard, and as you first told it, was that you were going to go inside yourself to what you knew, and you were going to work it from there, and that is when you become a person.
Hmm.
You know what I'm trying to say,
mm-hmm.
And you can still relate to all of those other pieces, but you've owned your own, in a certain sense, your own challenge, without blaming it or playing it off on anybody else or anything else or God, you know. Because I think, you know, the effort to kind of claim God comes in is also becomes, and people get bitter, scapegoating God. Or scapegoating somebody else, which is when we don't rely on working through our own challenges. You don't seem to be bitter about having moved to a different stance in your spirituality. And a lot of people who have grown up in a strongly, what I will call, more conservative or more, you know, self-defined Christian community as kids, they only break with it with bitterness. And you have, I think it comes, what I see is it comes, this, you were always in charge in a certain sense. You were the one who was making choices about your life. And the choices may have been put there by family and church, but you had the power to choose how you engaged them, and you did it in ways that you are still proud of.
Yeah, I think I really... I want to give a shout out to my parents for that one, because they were always so supportive of mine and my siblings' creativity, and they wanted us to find our passion and to pursue it. And in that way, they were giving us permission to make our own choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate them for doing that.
And it cuts against the stereotype of Christian, and I would say evangelical Christian families, that they would encourage that kind of ownership of their children's ownership of their own lives. But one of the most profound teaching is and this is in most religious traditions, is if you don't own it, it's not real. You have it has to, the person has to find what they choose in terms of their own practice, or it's fakery. And many devout parents encourage kids even more than they believe at times, I think, to make those choices, and you seem to be in good sync with your parents, which is neat.
They really do live their faith in a way that I still am in awe of and appreciate their compassion for people, and the way that they showed the love they felt from their Savior and their Creator to other people is mm-hmm. something that I will never forget. It impacted me so strongly. Many times they're doing it currently. They open their home to folks who are needing a place to stay, people who are displaced, and while folks are there, they, with true Southern hospitality, they mm-hmm. they treat them as family, feed them, make sure they have everything they need, and just the way they go about in the world, the way they interact with people, it's very much from their hearts. And I think that's one of the reasons it was hard for me to leave the faith as I did, because I did have such a strong example in living of what I feel like Jesus is, the ways Jesus is trying to get us to treat one another.
Right. So there is a validity there. It's just not something that you relate to as fully now.
Well, funny story. I'm sort of coming back around after a long spiral out into the realm of atheism, where where things were pretty sad. I felt pretty disconnected from all of life while I was dabbling in that realm, essentially because I thought I had to live only my rational mind and cut off my heart. And
but that's not necessarily an atheist claim.
That's my version of atheism.
Yeah. No. But it's a common version. It's a very common version.
Mm-hmm.
How did you? What was that passage like? What propelled you in that direction? And what did you find there? And how did you move on?
I think from a young age, just because of the way my parents carried themselves through the world, I was always starkly aware of injustices that I saw, and the more I learned about the history of the Christian church in school, I became more and more frustrated with how Christianity had been used to exploit, to separate, to divide, to enslave, and I began to see in the modern church this story continuing, and so I began looking, when I left the faith, began looking for thought traditions, spiritual traditions, that carried with them a sense of values that aligned with my own values. And anthropology gave me access to many options. But I also, there was sort of a lot of converging things at this time. I had recently begun to feel empowered about eating, about owning the foods that I ate and how they affected my body, and learning about industrial agriculture and what it's doing to the earth and what it's doing to our bodies. And I had been working in a community garden with a few friends, and it became clear that not only were my values around social justice and fairness important to me, that there was a physical way that we could achieve these values through the growing of our own food and the relocalization of work and of money and energy through local food production. And so I became interested in agriculture. I became interested in the wisdom traditions around ecological knowledge from different cultures. And I started to seek that out where I could find it, where I was, which was in Birmingham, Alabama.
Right.
And the places that this knowledge was still intact were in Black communities, where older women had been gardening for the last 50 years and preserved what knowledge they had. At this point, my own grandparents were out of reach. Some had passed on. Others were struggling with Alzheimer's, and I felt like I couldn't find that knowledge within my family, even though that knowledge is there, only a few generations removed from farming in my own family.
Right.
So I began seeking out this knowledge where I could find it in Birmingham, and in these gardens I met these wonderful people who shared my vision and my ideals, and I was pretty hungry for a community that shared my ideals. I think I've always sort of gravitated towards people that share my values, because that's where I became myself growing up, was in a community that shared my values. And I met this woman, Miss Virginia, and this fellow, Zach. Miss Virginia, she's in her 60s. She's a private home healthcare worker. Zach had been a mechanic for 10 years, read a book by Karl Marx, and decided to get a PhD. And the three of us together hatched this scheme that involved urban farming and cooperatives and anti-racism training. And the idea was we were going to transform the way Birmingham talked about development and Birmingham thought about meeting its own needs. And we started working together with many of the existing gardens that had popped up in Black communities, and We started a nonprofit that's still going today. I'm not involved anymore, like, currently, but it's still going, and we did succeed at changing the conversation. That's for sure. At the time, this was another one of those times when I just wasn't fully aware of what my heart was doing in this decision making. Rationally, this was a very political decision that I was making, and I felt like values could only come from rationality. And I then became curious about the many ways that people have provided food for themselves across time and space, and wondered if there was a discipline that combined all of that knowledge. And in my search, I found permaculture, which does combine all of that knowledge. And so I saved up money and decided to take a course. I was registered for one in Alabama that got canceled due to lack of interest, and the next closest one in time and space was here in Ithaca. So me and my buddy Jake came up and took it. And I think I was really drawn to permaculture because within permaculture, there's this notion that we can create an egalitarian utopia. And where I was spiritually during all of these converging garden work and starting a nonprofit and all that stuff was really looking for something that told me that we don't need salvation, that the concept of salvation is useless because we're capable as people of creating this utopia. If we just put our minds to it, we can treat each other fairly. Mm-hmm. And I think that sent me swinging from believing fully in the fundamentalist Christianity I was brought up with and needing a savior, needing salvation because I was born into sin and born imperfect and born separate,
right.
Swinging all the way over to this utopian permaculture ideal where salvation isn't necessary because we can think our way out of things. And neither of those things are the truth. I find myself swinging back towards the center now, or I guess more accurately, spiraling back around to appreciating the concept of salvation, not because I feel like we need it, and not because I currently believe that I need that to go to heaven or anything like that, but because we do damage each other as humans.
Right.
We damage each other. We're causing pain to one another and to other living beings, and I feel like I can see now why major world religions arose. They arose as a way to possibly mitigate that damage, and the concepts within them are here to help us try to do something a little better. And the sad thing is that if you think about religion as a tool that way, you can see that it's not what's wrong in itself. It's the way it's deployed. It's how it's used as a tool.
Right, and even the term salvation comes from a root that means to make space for. You know, and it's about making a space for it, whether it's in this time or for all time, and people bump each other and bruise and cut and scar and even wipe each other out because they're not very good at it. They're not very skillful at using their power. And I think that's what you have come to, it's what you're saying, you've come to kind of sit in the middle of the mess rather than idolize the that you'll get lifted out of it from the outside or that you can work your way out of it. And that's just a classic human dilemma. It's so... You brought more music with you, and
oh, sure.
Should we go to the Dead Prez Happiness or one of the other songs?
Yeah, let's go to Dead Prez. I'll just talk briefly about it. So my time there, working in gardens and starting the nonprofit. I was listening to a lot of Dead Prez. He's a revolutionary hip hop artist. I actually struggled to find a song that I felt like was appropriate for a Sunday morning radio show, but this one reminds me of this community ritual, my favorite community ritual that one of the gardens in Birmingham held. It was a collard greens cook-off. So the idea was everybody competes to make the most flavorful collard greens, but the rule is you can't use pork fat, which I know sounds like blasphemy if you know soul food cooking, but my friend that was the leader of this garden, she was an inspired natural foods chef, and it was sort of her mission to introduce that foods can be tasty without pork fat, which was a new concept to me as well.
Okay, so here we go.
It's a beautiful day and everybody's feeling wonderful. The ladies is out looking fly, dressed comfortable. I love to wake up and feel the breeze through my window. Slip on a fatigue, grab a Dutch and roll some endo. It be days like these that make life so much easier. Fist thawing out, Guinness out in the freezer. Walk the block at my leisure. My leave summertime is like an anesthesia. So many pretty things to please ya. The greenery, beautiful birds, natural scenery, or even just the infinite sky. We be forever puffing loud and block or telling jokes in the ride. When the weather be hot, everybody be outside having fun. Aight. Eating fresh fruits and vegetables and good food put me in the mood for a festival. Some say the summer make a woman more sexual. It's instinct, that's why my game be right on schedule. I put the great mother nature on a pedestal. She always fly, but today she's exceptional. If I had a chance to make a wish, every day would be just like this. Full of happiness, I feel great. Even though we got mad things to deal with, happiness is all in the mind. Let's unwind and find a reason to smile. I'm just glad to be living, feeling fine. Leaving my bad times behind feels great. And no, we can't escape from the realness. Happiness is all in the mind. Let's unwind and find a reason to smile. I'm just glad to be alive, feeling fine. Living life one day at a time, feeling great, great.
Yeah, know what I'm saying? I just want to give a shout out to everybody who got a birthday today. Happiness.
Happiness. Have you ever heard the children play? Sometimes I feel the same way. Roll up a J and get away. Put some food in the grill or just chill. Maybe build with my elders. Never know the things they could tell you. Learning why the cage bird sings, cause it's the valuable things you know to separate the men from the kings. The flowers that bloom in the sun, and everybody singing the tune, cause it's time to have fun. Me out, rollerblading. A day when no one could have stayed inside. Watch the car, now it's time to take a ride. Me and my crew hanging out all night, the sunrise, celebration of life, cause every day is a surprise. Think of the rich countryside on the land of Jamaica, mountain springs and green acres, or any other place in the world your mind takes you. It's the good times in life that everybody can relate to. And you can leave your troubles behind and have a wonderful time. Lay back and just ease your mind. You can leave your troubles behind and have a wonderful time. Lay back and just ease your mind.
I feel great even though we got mad things to deal with. Happiness is all in the mind. Let's unwind and find a reason to smile. I'm just glad to be living, feeling fine. Leaving my bad times behind feels great. And no, we can't escape from the realness. Happiness is all in the mind. Let's unwind and find a reason to smile. I'm just glad to be alive, feeling fine. Living life one day at a time, feeling great, great.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Anna McCown. So, Anna, you wanted to say something about this song, something more.
Yeah, as I'm listening to it, I'm hearing the artist speak of taking time to take care of oneself, and it's reminding me that something that we weren't too good at when we were starting that nonprofit was taking time to take care of ourselves in our work. The lyrics there that even though there's mad work to do, we're still going to stop and have this moment. I think it took me moving to Ithaca to even begin to learn how to take care of myself in those ways.
So, okay, so you were driven by the mission and you lost sight of everything. That's what I'm inferring here.
Mm-hmm. That's true too. Also, I was sort of running from some wounds I had sustained from coming out and constantly working on this project, on the nonprofit Magic City Agriculture Project, was a way for me to continue to do things that I believed in, but also maybe not face some of the things that had happened to me that were.
So,
we're hurting.
So this was part of your coming out and people's reactions to that. You threw yourself into your work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The anti-racist community, the food movement, these folks, they accepted me as I was and took me in at a time when I felt like I couldn't return to the community that I had grown up with.
Mm-hmm.
Even my family, it was tough times for us. We we were speaking to each other maybe once every 6 months at this point, and not, and even though we lived close, you know, within 45 minutes of each other. So,
right, right.
Yeah, so it was hard. I felt like I had lost my entire social foundation and was sort of grasping for a new one. And my friends in the anti-racism food movement caught me.
So they held you when the other scaffolding had fallen away for your life. But so and did you have to leave the area in order to then reconnect with your family, or how has that process played out?
Yeah, I think so. This is another case of decision making I thought was rational. My graduate program, I decided to drop out because my professors and I, we didn't agree. I wanted to do my thesis work around Magic City Agriculture Project, and for them, I was too emotionally invested in the work, mm-hmm. Which I think makes sense in a scholarly way. It doesn't mean what I was doing was wrong. I think I just was using the wrong mode. I've heard... when I've spoken to you about this before, Eric, you've called it ministry, the work that I was doing, and that right. does feel more accurate. I was doing work that the community wanted to be done and had invited me to do. So, yeah.
And so, anthropologists call that going native sometimes, which is a pejorative, you know.
Yeah. So I had quit my program, and I had taken the permaculture course here the year before, and they were hiring a cook just right after I quit my program. So I applied and came up here and cooked for the course. And in the process of being here and seeing what was going on, I decided I needed to move here and gain some skills, some hands-on skills, because aside from like vegetable gardening, I didn't have any other agricultural skills, and I really was interested in learning about keeping animals and carpentry and those sorts of things. And I didn't have access as a woman to that stuff in Alabama in a way that that suited me. And I think now things have changed in Alabama. The movement really is picking up there, and I think I would have access if I were there now. But at the time, I didn't, and so. In the course of cooking for the course, my friend Jake from Alabama, who had already moved up here, convinced me that I should come, and I went back home and gave all my jobs and my family a month's notice that I was leaving, and I left. And then since I've been here, I've realized that as much of that decision sounded rational, a lot of it was needing to get some space between coming out and leaving my community and leaving the church, and myself as possible. And in that space, I began to unpack what all had happened and be able to reflect on what had happened and own what had happened in a way that I just hadn't taken time to do before.
What does that mean for you to own what happened?
I think just to accept it, just to accept that it happened and not try to change it, mm-hmm. not try to allow myself to feel what I felt about it, because I didn't at the time. I think I was constantly hedging when it was going on by either throwing myself into my work, or when I tried to speak to my family about it, I consistently would politicize the discussion because I felt too tender to bring my own self right. into it and into the discussion. And
you couldn't be hurt.
No, I didn't want to be any more hurt than I already was. And I felt like if I spoke from my own experience rather than like from the experience of the queer community at large, then I would be too vulnerable to being hurt. And, you know, my parents didn't know what to do either. I mean, we were all making it all up as we went along. They they felt like it was something at first that needed to be punished, or to be actively unsupportive of what they called my lifestyle. So there was a lot of mistakes that we made just because we didn't know. None of us had ever gone through something like this before. So to just own my own mistakes and own my parents' mistakes and sort of accept that we're all just humans, like trying to figure it out. I think I needed to do that so that I I could start to close the gap between us.
Right. So one of the things we don't do well as a culture is we don't help each other learn how to change when we really change radically in each other's faces. It's not going to be pleasant regardless. I mean, we can be open and affirming of all sorts of things, but when that person that you have loved is no longer in that same way with you, it's painful. Mm-hmm. What has changed in you? How have you been able to approach them, or have they been able to approach you in the intervening time?
That's a great question. I think when I moved, it was really clear to them too that that I had been hurt, and I think the space gave them a chance to process as well. Mm-hmm. And so from the time that I moved on, I would go home and visit once a year, and they would come up here once a year. And every time I went home, we would sit down and start to try to unpack what had been going on. And we just shared what the whole experience had been like for us. And I heard things from them that I had no idea what they had been going through, and vice versa. I mean, I was shocked to learn that me coming out shook their faith more than any other event that they could have imagined would have, because it called into question the beliefs they had that they felt like were biblical. And mm-hmm. to hear that was so touching for me. I just didn't know that I had had that kind of impact on
them.
They
took you seriously.
Yeah.
You didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then they apologized to me for not knowing, for not having known how to handle things, and for, mm-hmm. and they said, we should have held you when you were going through that, but we didn't know how, and we didn't know what to do. So to hear that from them meant so much to me. That really opened up this avenue for us to continue to come back to one another. You know, we've burst the bubble of like innocence and all is well, and we're like standing in reality now, and standing in the messiness, as mm-hmm. you said, and trying to see each other as whole people in that messiness. And it's a long time coming. It's still in process, and I guess I don't have expectations for the process. I think I'm just accepting it as it unfolds, and appreciate their willingness to do it with me.
Yeah. Yeah. And from my point of view, it's happening fairly quickly.
Mm.
That you have separated and then come back to face each other with compassion and pain.
Mm-hmm.
Let's cut to your third song, Let Everything That Hath Breath. I think it's in a moment. It's appropriate, no?
Yeah. Maybe I could say something about this one, too.
Sure.
So in my spiral journey back around to appreciating religion as a tool, I've recognized that church is such an important need that I have. And I've, in the last year, really created my own version of church that involves... it did involve at the beginning going to what I called Waterfall Church with a few friends. We go to Taganic Falls every Friday morning and just share what was happening in our spiritual lives with each other. And then convening on the new moon and the full moon for a fire, for a similar sharing space. Going to yoga once a week, and then joining the Trumansburg Community Chorus. I played guitar in church all through my teenage years, and occasionally sang in the choir. And there is something so joyful about making music with a group of people. I'm going to be singing in the community chorus again this fall, and it'll be my third season. I love it. I love the director. I love the people. I'm by far the youngest in the group. Everybody that sings there, they have amazing senses of humor. The old fogies of Trumansburg. So this is a song we actually sang in our last performance, Let Everything That Hath Breath. It's a gospel style tune. It's close to my heart, obviously, because it's a song that makes me think of my upbringing, but also it reminds me specifically of the church I went to growing up. We would get together with the Black Baptist Church once a year to exchange songs, and this is very much in the style of the song that would have been shared with us. And it was awesome to sing it with the choir this year because everybody wanted to move their bodies, and in Southern Baptist Christianity, moving while singing is seen as like a distraction for other worshipers. So we got down while we sang this song, and I hope maybe you and I can get down while playing.
Sure.
You're listening to WRFI Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest is Anna McCown. So Anna, the way we close this show out is to talk about, you know, what is it that you do? It seems like Ithaca has been this is a place of sojourn for you to kind of discover some things. But what I end the show with is asking people, what do you do intellectually, emotionally, physically, to restore yourself on a regular basis, daily, weekly, monthly? You've described a few things already, but what is it that you, when do you know you need to take care of yourself? This is something you've been learning, and what do you do on those three levels? To me, the three combined kind of get at our spirit.
Mm-hmm. Usually I sit on my porch. There's a small porch right off of my room at the house I currently live at, mm-hmm. in a rocking chair, ideally, if it's available. And read a book and intermittently close the book to look at the garden and return to the book. And that's in a nutshell what I do. Mm-hmm. There's lots of versions of that I carry out through hiking or in these new moon and full moon women's circles that I convene with some friends. There's a lot of just sitting and being and mm-hmm. feeling a part of the environment, feeling close to each other if there's other people there, and intellectually, I guess I love to read. That's probably the primary way I'm intellectually stimulated. But really conversation with people who are wanting to share their spiritual journeys mm-hmm. with me. Mm-hmm. That's how I'm primarily intellectually stimulated.
And by spiritual journey, what do you mean?
I mean anyone's pathway to becoming the person that they are, whatever they do to fully love and accept themselves, and also work on and improve themselves. That I want to hear about it. I want to share that with them, and I also want to support people in that. Since I was young, I've played a support role to many people going through many different things, and I haven't necessarily had the tools to do that in a healthy way many times. But I feel like I'm gaining those tools now.
Mm-hmm. And what is changing in you that you have? I mean, that you have the tools now, or that you're gaining the tools now when you don't see yourself as having had them in the past?
I think I'm better able now to identify when something is someone else's weight to carry and when I should help them carry it. That's something I've often attempted to help carry when it wasn't appropriate, and that doesn't go well for anyone involved.
So. No, and so how do you what is a quality that what makes it clearer to you that this is their challenge and it's not, and there's nothing you can really do for their challenge other than to encourage them?
I think it's more of an intuitive knowing than anything else, of like not relying on rational clues for that, but really feeling it out. That's mm-hmm. really how mm-hmm. I'm able to tell.
And I'm going to play with this because this is a really, really important distinction. What is it that you feel when you see somebody is on a path that is their own path, that your being in there would interfere with them? What is it? What is that? It's all, for me, it's like, I'm not the dance partner, or I'm not the, that's not my place to be, but it's my place to say, go for it. Mm-hmm. Or I will watch while you are on that cliff or wherever it is that is important, but harrowing, you know. And for me, it's almost like, I don't mean to ramble too much here or in pose, but for me, it's like learning to be able to say that on almost every situation, because there's very little that I can do for anybody else, but the most I can do is appreciate what they're doing, and then there may be something we can do together that may have benefits for both of us, but it's really hard to discern or to talk about it. And we don't as a culture, because we have this language of helping, mm-hmm. which gets in the way of being together sometimes. Mm-hmm. And taking kind of full ownership of ourselves and full engagement where it seems like we can really do something together, and you know, and just letting it happen. Mm-hmm. But we don't have a good language for talking about these changes. And like what you've described with pulling away from your parents, we almost have to separate from the people or get some distance before you can begin to look at how you can honor their struggle and collaborate in certain pieces, but not take on another person's struggle.
Mm-hmm. I've spoken with a friend about this, and we came up with this metaphor. There's three TPs. There's my TP that's mine. It's me. I own it. It's me and my full self. There's your TP. You own it. It's you and your full self. Then there's a third TP where we meet sometimes to get some work done, but then we return back to our own TPs.
Right. And Gibran has a similar, Khalil Gibran has a similar image about a relationship where there are two separate trees, but they have some intertwining, and there's, you know, the relationship is a third entity.
That's a beautiful natural analogy. Yeah. Maybe I'll start using that instead of the TPs.
So, you have one more piece of music before we call it a morning. It's Diane Kluck and Sarah.
Yeah, Diane Kluck. She's an amazing singer-songwriter. It's my favorite kind of music is live. So I've only ever seen her perform live. This song reached out and grabbed me when she performed. It's about the many deaths that we each experience as we change, like every day, monthly. Mm-hmm. And also it could be about physical death too, but it really spoke to me as spiritual death. And not only that, she's calling out in worship to these goddesses of spiritual death, Kali from Hinduism, Eresh Kigal from ancient Sumerian, from the Inanna story. And then Sarah, Saint Sarah, I guess, is gypsies in France. Look to her as the guardian who ushered Mary, Mother of God, and Mary Magdalene, and Mary Magdalene's child to safety at one point in history. So this
and spiritual death is death to self. Is that what you mean, or is it something different?
Yeah, and occasionally, I think for me, it's important to occasionally to die to oneself. Maybe it only happens once in a lifetime, but for me, I feel like it happens in small ways many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's important to be able to grow, to shuck off the old and move into what's new. And also, when you come out of that state of death, I feel like I've always been able to be revived once more by the miracle of existence. That anything exists at all is such a miracle, and I welcome any small death so I could be reunited with that feeling upon the rebirth.
Anna, it's been wonderful to get to know you.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
Here we go.
Broad spirit comes back along the way, comes to me red black with a lot to say. She sit my tail down, pulled a wishbone wide, she reamed my head out along the toss me in, her dirt rained or down my fallen skin. Stripped so lonely, I can't even